Well, hey there, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could make it today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Man, have we got a good show for you today. James Mueller is our guest. James is the first American to be extradited to a foreign country for execution, and he's our guest today. So obviously, he was able to overcome the most severe adversity I think I've ever heard of. It's a great interview, and you want to be sure and stick around for it. We're going to have James right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Sure do love to hear from you. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney @yahoo.com. Let me know how you're doing. Everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is James Mueller. James is the first American to be extradited to a foreign country by the United States government for execution. Very ominous, and we talk about, obviously you can't get much more ominous than that, and we spend a lot of time, James, on this show talking about how to get past adversity. That's the roughest adversity I've heard yet, and obviously things turned out okay because you're here talking to us today. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be able to share the story, and I hope there's somebody out there that can gain something from it.
I believe the case is going to be that people will be able to gain something from this, James. And one little tradition we have here on the Journey of Hope is we like for our guests to give us a little bit of a background. Yours is fascinating. Can you give us a little bit of your background, please?
Sure. I'm an international businessman. I traded oil and gas overseas at a rather large company. Back in 2002, I was on my honeymoon. I took my wife to Costa Rica for the honeymoon. And while I was there, two of my employees got in a fight, and one shot the other to death.
My God.
Unfortunately for me, the witnesses to the crime pinpointed me as that person.
Oh, my gosh.
Fortunately for me, I was 12,000 miles away, so I was able to prove myself innocent. But it took 12 years to do that. So I was arrested on a plane in Atlanta, Georgia, on the way back to Thailand. I had a warrant for murder out of Thailand, went through the extradition hearing in Atlanta, Georgia, in the federal court, and had no way to win the case because there was no charge against me in the U.S.
Right.
It was a treaty agreement between two countries to send requested prisoners. So I was shackled in the back of a plane in Atlanta, Georgia, and shipped off to Bangkok, Thailand, where I spent the next 9 months in trial. I won that trial. And upon the win, expected fully to be released and fly home. But that didn't happen. The Kingdom of Thailand did not recognize the treaty requirements of returning me. Instead, continued to appeal my win. So I eventually went through four trials before I was released.
Oh my.
And I was actually released by the King of Thailand, who gave me an amnesty on his wife's birthday in 2013.
Oh my.
So what a great day that was. The King of Kings talked to the King, and that King set me free.
I'm just sitting here speechless. Lots of questions, lots of red flags popping up in terms of this extradition from the United States. And I don't really want to go Really, I want to focus on how you dealt with this, but I do want to spend just a second talking about the process. When you were extradited out of Atlanta, there's no way you could have anybody speak on your behalf in terms of witnesses, right? I mean...
Well, there is no way. And also, there's no judicial process in an extradition hearing. The process is a political one.
Right.
And the requirements between the two parties to that agreement
James, who are the people that are negotiating the treaty? Is it ambassadors or...
Well, in this case, it was John Ashcroft, who was at the time the Secretary of State, with the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Thailand. Since this was the first case of its nature, they wanted to make sure I was killed properly. So they made sure they followed that treaty 100%. And the treaty 100% said simply this: we have a valid arrest warrant for him. You're bound under the treaty to send him. And the Constitution of the United States has no value in that type of situation. So that's how I ended up in Thailand, and it was quite disappointing.
Okay. Like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on the process,
sure.
But the treaty between the United States and Thailand, as far as extradition goes, did that already exist, or was that
something? It did. It was.
Okay.
It did exist, yes.
Okay. That's what I was curious about, and... Has anything been done to look at that since your case?
It has. After my case, the treaty was amended to give the United States the authority and the ability to not send its own citizens. So that was the benefit to anyone else this may happen to.
Like, duh, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because the thing about it is, James, when you send someone to Thailand, they're not going to get... you know, justice isn't going to be served in terms of, I mean, you said you went through four trials. I mean, how does that equate to our justice system? I mean, we've got problems, but they're not that bad, you know? And so
there's a lot of differences.
Yeah. And I wonder about the United States sending. So John Ashcroft, I used to kind of like that dude until like about 5 minutes ago.
I liked him right up until that moment myself.
I'm so disappointed in that. Okay. James, thank God you're here to talk to us today.
And, amen.
And I want to talk about how you dealt with this, because this show primarily, you know, is for ex-offenders who, as they come home from incarceration, are dealing with all sorts of adversity. And I hereby label you the king of adversity, sir. What we want to do is tap your experience and find out what you did to deal with this mentally to get through it, so we could maybe apply some of those things to our lives as we're going through reintegration, which seems like such a small thing compared to what you went through. But talk to us about that, James. Talk to us about, was it your spirituality? Was it a growing process that you had? How did you keep faith and hope? And talk to us about that.
You know, it was a combination of those things. I was a spiritual man going in, but my spirituality grew immensely in there, because that was the first time in my life where I was 100% alone on the planet. I was flown 12,000 miles and change. I was put into a jungle prison with 6,000 other prisoners who didn't speak English.
Jeez.
I was facing a trial of judges, no jury of your peers. There was no constitutional guarantees. And I knew for a fact that there was no way for me to win, period, once I got there. But what I realized is, if I didn't do something, they were going to shoot me. That was the execution method back then. They would shoot you through the heart. And I really did not look forward to that at all.
No.
But I was able to look back. I had spent a lot of time in the scripture, and I looked back at some other prison experiences, and I realized that I looked at some of the Old Testament guys. Joseph was in prison for 20-something years,
yes,
in slavery. Never actually did anything wrong. But one of the things that struck me about him was he kept going towards the vision. So he had this vision of what he would be, and he believed that God could bring him to that vision. So he kept the faith. And I really tried to do that. And I will say I failed often, but God never left me there. And it was the most amazing experience to find yourself in that situation where it's God or nothing, and to find out God was more than enough. And he really was. He kept my mind focused on the trials. He kept my mind focused on the vision of walking out of there. And I never looked at that place. The personnel in there would always tell me I should learn Thai because I was never going home. So I refused to learn Thai because this was not my home.
Oh, James, I can so relate to that. Just the idea of not conforming to that. And there are a lot of people that have been in prison in the United States. I can tell you for a fact, I'm one of them, that refused to conform to the culture, the lingo, the tattoos, you know.
Absolutely.
I'm just passing through. I can so relate to that in my own way, which is not exactly what you went through. It's not even close, really, but I get that so much, and a lot of our listeners do too. Okay, continue, please.
Okay. The one main thing that I concentrated on every day was where I was going instead of where I was. Because where I was incredibly, I mean, it was a scary place.
What were the conditions there, like?
Well, there's no electricity. There's no plumbing. There's no toilets. There's no walls. There's no communication with the outside world.
Did they feed you?
And violence is the norm.
Did they feed you?
So, yes, they did.
Sort of?
The food that they tried to feed me was inedible to an American. Of course, they loved it. They fiery, hot, red chili soup with rice and on occasion a fish head or something in it.
Right.
But it wasn't good for the digestion. But they did offer those of us who had a few extra dollars, which I was lucky enough to have, the ability to have food sent in.
Okay.
So I was able to take care of myself well in that respect. The rest of it, though, was a complete nightmare.
Violent?
And what I felt, the violence was quite normal. On my record, I have 17 prison fights. One of them I broke my back in. I was paralyzed for a year.
Jesus.
There was no medical facility whatsoever, so I just laid down for a year. Fortunately, eventually I was able to get taken out to a hospital and have that repaired. And by the time I actually got out, I was able to walk again. And it was like being born again. When I walked out of there, the back frying, that door opened, it was like a new life. I didn't realize it might be a little difficult to start that new life, which it was, but it was a new life, and I've made the most of it.
Well, you've done it.
I will.
Go ahead. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
I will tell you this, that when you come out of a situation where there's only one alternative to coming out, and that's to be tied to a stake and shot through the heart. That was it. You really have to choose at that point who you are and whose you are, because there was no way for me to win this thing. The government tendered 60 witnesses against me. I had zero for the defense. The system of justice over there doesn't allow for you or me to be in the trial or in the jury. It's seven judges, and they have a predisposition when somebody looks different and is charged with such horrendous crimes to convict.
Wow.
But in the end, it was an amazing decision the court made, that not only was I not guilty, which is what you want, but they said that I was innocent and it was illegal under Thai law to hold me, and ordered that I'd be immediately released. Funny thing is, it took nine more years.
Holy cow.
And in those 9 years, it got incredibly difficult.
Oh my God, I can imagine. But and you didn't know, during that nine-year period, could it have been tomorrow morning that you were released? Was it like that, or?
It was, you know, that the record would state, I'm not going to be released. But I professed every day that I was going home tomorrow. And actually, people in the prison started calling me Mr. Tomorrow, because they'd say, when are you going home? And I'd say, tomorrow. I did something every day to move myself forward to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate, unlike many people I met in the prison system, my wife stuck through me through this whole thing. So after the first 2 years, she wasn't in Thailand for the first 2 years, but she was able to get over there and then work in Thailand on my behalf daily for the next 9 until finally I was given that King's amnesty and we flew back here to the beautiful USA.
Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about that, but I also want to talk about you coming home and writing the book. Both those things I want to talk about. First, let's get into, okay, you're released, you come home, the adversity is still immense in your life, I'm sure. And I'm sure you're happy.
There's certain things that don't go away. If you were to Google my name, you'd find out that I'm a contract killer, that I'm a leader of a RICO organization, a criminal organization, that I'm a money launderer, that I'm a fraud. You'll read that I was executed in Thailand. You'll read that I was extradited to Thailand. None of these are true, and they don't go away. So when I came back and I endeavored to reopen my business, which takes a lot of government regulators' permission, I still haven't got it done. 3 years later, I still can't get the licenses to do what I do. Not because I don't meet their criteria, but because none of them can get past Googling my name. And it just bothers me that these type of things can follow somebody who's either been convicted for a crime or charged with a crime after they've, according to our Constitution, paid their dues. So I wasn't convicted, and I'm still paying for the charge. And I imagine that I'll pay for that charge forever. But having said that, since the God of the universe could get me out of a prison 12,000 miles from home, I accept that he can plant me pretty well here also.
Did you go eat a cheeseburger, dude?
Man, I did. Yeah, I did.
I did too.
You know, I'll tell you this, though. My first day, I had planned on a steak at the New York Steak Company.
Yeah.
And which is at the Marriott in downtown Bangkok. And when I went to check into the Marriott before I could get on a plane home, my picture was on the front page of every paper on every table in the place.
Yeah.
And they refused me a room and refused me service. So that was the first indication I had that, gee, maybe winning doesn't make this go away. So I was refused a room, and I was refused that steak. And I went to a substandard hotel down the street, and I had the biggest, juiciest, greasiest cheeseburger you could imagine.
Yeah.
And probably I had a dozen of them before I got on the plane. But it was just as good as a steak.
I did the same thing when I came home, my friend. So you left Bangkok, and eventually you make your way back to the States. Where is home for you?
Home is in Orlando, Florida.
Okay. And you come back to Florida, and thank God your wife is with you. And I was incarcerated.
Well, that didn't actually happen either. She's here now.
Uh-huh.
But my wife is not American. And because of the time I was in prison there, she had no visa to be in the country. So I came home in 2013, and they wouldn't give her a visa until 2014, one and a half years later. So my two children and wife were in Thailand, where I couldn't go because I had been deported.
Right.
And they couldn't come to America because she had no visa. So what we did for the next year and a half was, you know, we had a long commute marriage until she finally got that visa and moved here.
Well,
it was almost as bad being in Florida without the family, because in Thailand they could come visit, you know, and right. Those visits were really nice.
But as far as Thailand deporting you, at this point, now that you've got your wife and children back with you, you probably think, so what, you know? That's what I would think.
Well, the idea was to execute me.
Yeah.
Yeah, the idea was to execute me. And I will tell you that God is so good. There was a large organization that was involved in the prosecution. I mean, this was no small thing to, first, the extradition trial here, the extradition itself, which was an international sensation. Then the loss of face that happened when I proved myself to be innocent. It was huge. And it almost came to the point where I would have been killed for winning just as bad as losing. So when I was able to get out of there, there were a lot of people that I wasn't happy with.
I can imagine.
Amazing how over the couple of years, everybody passed away in pretty bad circumstances. And I thought about all those feelings of revenge that people have when things like this happen.
Right.
And I had to wash those out of my mind and pray forgiveness. And I never took any action. But I see that those people that use nefarious activities to get their way all came to that end. And I think, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
There's no doubt about it.
And now I look back and I think, see, Thailand's fine now. Everybody who hated me passed away. I hope they passed away in faith, but I doubt it from the character I knew them to have.
Well, I got to tell you, this is an amazing story, and you eventually decide to write your book. I want to talk about your book for, we're getting kind of close on time here.
Sure.
I Cannot Fail is the name of the book. And how did you decide to write the book? What was the experience like writing it? Was it cathartic for you? I hear that from people that have been in really bad situations when they write a book. Sometimes it's very cathartic. So tell us about the writing, the deciding to write the book and the writing of the book.
Well, first off, it was therapeutic. Just going through it gave me a memory of all the things God had done through the years. And to be able to chronicle them and put them in the chronological order of how he acted. I know looking back, I wouldn't have had him lead me any other way because he led myself and my family through it well. Second, my wife, she's never read the book, nor will she. She says she does not want to live that ever again. But when I wrote the book, I looked at the lessons I learned during this. And there were lessons that I'd always used in business that made me successful. And most of those lessons have a scriptural background to them. And I wrote each chapter on the lesson and the activity. And I took that lesson and I wrapped a story around it to see that the lessons that we learn that are immutable, which are scriptural, work 100% of the time. So they'll work for you if you're chained to a wall in Southeast Asia facing a death penalty. They'll work for you if you're looking for a new job. It's the character of activity that these lessons drive us to develop. And I wrote the book more as a lesson book than a story book.
Right.
But in the end, it comes out a love story because the hero really is my wife. I mean, in the end, it was her. Had I not had that outside help, I would have made it out anyway, but I wouldn't have made it out sane. So she really is the hero of that story. One of the things that you'll learn in that book is, you know, being right doesn't matter. But if you're right and you don't do anything about it, it's the same as being wrong. I was right in this. There was nothing I did that should have caused this kind of treatment. And it was easy during the process to give up. The United States had made overtures to me, just plead guilty to being a kingpin, and we'll give you life in prison in the U.S. You won't be shot in Thailand. In Thailand, they offered me the opportunity to plead guilty to murder, and I'd have life in prison instead of being shot. That would have been the easy way out because it was pretty scary facing the death penalty. But I knew I was right. And if you're right and you don't do anything about it, it's the same as being wrong. I still would have been convicted. But I did what I knew to be right. And I can promise you this, that when you do what you know to be right and you do it prayerfully and you do it with the principles that God has given us to do it the right way, you'll walk out clean. And I look now at the end of this and realize that the prison, though difficult and terrible, it has one benefit for anybody who goes through it, and that is it will teach you to focus your mind on what's important and then work towards those things that are important. When I came out, before I wrote this book, I thought of a couple of things I wanted to do. And I came to this conclusion that if I knew I couldn't fail, I wouldn't do the things I was attempting to do. I would do something better. And so the question is raised in the book, if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And I could tell you that with these lessons, you don't fail at anything you do, you just quit. If people don't quit, they always succeed at what they endeavor to do if you do it the right way. And that's why I wrote this book, to teach people that you could be facing a lot of things. And you could have a lot of complaints about the things that happened in your life. And you could have had a lot of injustice done. And you may have been to prison because you were guilty or innocent. But today is a new day. And if you have to do something today, why don't you do the thing you really want to do? Because when you finish it, you're going to be where you really want to be. So that's the premise of I Cannot Fail. We can fail whenever we quit, or we can keep moving and get to our goal.
James, where can we get the book?
Right now you can buy the book at jamesmullerauthor.com.
Okay.
In 2 weeks you'll have it on Amazon, Kindle, and hopefully by Christmas on every bookstore in the country.
Beautiful, beautiful. What an amazing story. James, I want to thank you so much. The book is called I Cannot Fail, James Mueller, the author. Fantastic story. I have not read the book, but I want to, and I probably will. And I encourage others to do so as well. I think we can find nuggets of inspiration in James's story. James, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Thanks for having me. And don't give up hope.
Thank you, sir. We won't. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Love to get email from me. You can catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Promise I'll answer. mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Special guest today, James Mueller. Wow, what a story. Hey, listen, I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.